With the coronavirus pandemic causing the world to work from home, there's been a major influx towards video calling apps, and with that, there's an increased risk of cybersecurity breaches and hacking. One of the most popular video conferencing apps is Zoom, with over 200 million daily users due to its user-friendly and easy-to-access features. However, it's been found that Zoom has a lack of transparency and there have been privacy breaches. Patty Burton has more.
Last week, the chief executive of Zoom, Eric Yuan, made a statement responding to the wide range of criticism the company has received during the coronavirus pandemic. This included sending user data to Facebook and a phenomenon named Zoom bombing, which allowed uninvited users to gatecrash meeting calls and conferences, with some cases of pornographic imagery and racist remarks being shown. Professor Matthew Warren, Deputy Director of the Deakin University Center for Cybersecurity, says Zoom has a two-pronged issue.
In terms of the Zoom technology, where the problems have come from is they've found instances of where there is malware installed with some of the Zoom installers. The other problem that Zoom has is their statement around their encryption is that they haven't got particularly strong encryption. They're using weaker encryption. And the other problem is they're saying that it's end-to-end encryption. So, you know, you're encrypted on your computer and the person at the other end's encrypted and data's encrypted. And that doesn't seem to be the case. Whereas some of the other software like WebEx and Skype have point-to-point encryption. The other concern is about that some of those encryption keys are actually coming from China. So some of the technology that Zoom is using is actually linked to China, and those China servers are releasing the encryption keys, which means data's being held on Chinese servers, which may be, you know, accessible, you know, from the Chinese authorities. And this is the reason why in the UK and also in Australia, they've issued warning regarding, you know, the use of Zoom for sensitive meetings.
That's the problem with the technology, but there's also the problem with how it's being used.
The problem with Zoom is all the defaults for, like, your meetings are set is open. So it means that when people set up a Zoom meeting and they haven't put in the password protection, anyone with that Zoom meeting number can join it. The other problem you have is when someone joins your Zoom meeting, their email address and their profile pictures, you've then had the problem with Zoom and the Facebook issue. So what happened with Zoom is one of the things that they allow is for you to authenticate into Zoom using your Facebook credentials. So it's called a federated login. But what happened with their Apple app for Zoom was it was then sharing when people logged into Facebook on their Apple phone to use Zoom, it was then sharing all this, you know, information about users with Facebook as part of that sort of login process. So that became like a privacy issue.
Zoom chief executive Eric Yuan stated that they did not design the product with the foresight of everyone working from home. I asked Professor Matthew Warren if he thought this was a reasonable excuse, or should these issues have been at the forefront of the design process?
It should have been at the forefront. There's a concept called security by design, and that concept is it doesn't matter whatever system you're developing. At the development stage, the security considerations are built into the system. So I think that Zoom, just trying to make up a bit of an excuse on why they shouldn't have done things properly before.
With these types of apps keeping the world connected during the pandemic, there are many consequences.
I think, you know, it's going to become the new normal. And because it's going to become the new normal, it means that cyber criminals, you know, are going to, you know, try to exploit those systems. So as we've seen with Zoom, you know, there's a whole range of issues that actually relate to the application and also how people, you know, use it. Really trying to change people's behavior and culture But because this is a completely new system, people are still learning how to use it. They're still learning, you know, how to enable, you know, the security features. And Zoom, the company, are now realizing, you know, that there's now all these security issues and challenges that they need to resolve in order for it to be used ongoing into the future.
Professor Matthew Warren from Deakin University there, speaking with Paddy Burton. We awoke this morning to find that the health of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has taken a turn for the worse, and he's now in intensive care. In the UK, there is no Deputy Prime Minister as we have here in Australia, and usually the Foreign Secretary would deputise if the PM was incapacitated. I asked Emeritus Professor Clement McIntyre of the University of Adelaide whether Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab was effectively in control of the United Kingdom.
Yes, effectively, with the Prime Minister isolated and incapacitated as he is in intensive care, then the burden of leadership passes to Dominic Raab, who is both the Foreign Secretary, the equivalent of our Foreign Minister here in Australia, but he also has a title called First Secretary of State, which effectively means he is deputy to Boris Johnson. The UK doesn't really have a deputy prime minister. They have appointed those people to that post from time to time, but it's not common. And normally somebody with a title First Secretary of State is deemed by the system to be the deputy to all intents and purposes. And it's clear that Johnson has handed responsibility to Raab while he's in intensive care. And so Dominic Raab is, to all intents and purposes, acting prime minister.
It's pretty serious. Has there ever been a Prime Minister that's had to step back from office in this way?
I can't think of anyone who's been incapacitated to the extent that Johnson clearly is now in intensive care. There have been Prime Ministers who have had serious health scares in the past. Winston Churchill, of course, had a stroke while he was Prime Minister. Harold Macmillan in the early 60s resigned because... that I can't think of any case in recent history where somebody has been effectively removed from office by the extent of their illness.
What are the mechanics involved here? Is it easy for Dominic Raab to take the reins?
Well, relatively. I think we've got to remember that Johnson was first laid low with this virus about 10 days ago and was in self-isolation. So there's no doubt that Downing Street would have been putting some plans in place in case the worst thing happened, which it has. And Raab would have known that it would fall to him. So the system would be coping with that quite well. He will just step into the Prime Minister's seat when it comes to sort of chairing meetings and making the final decisions and so on.
He like? Is he a safe pair of hands?
Relatively, I think. Johnson obviously seemed to have appointed him to the post that he has. He's got relatively limited cabinet experience. He served as the Brexit secretary under Theresa May for about 4 months before resigning. He was a very strong Brexiteer. When Theresa May resigned the leadership, he was one of those Conservatives who nominated for the leadership, but he didn't get very far through the election process. And was a Johnson loyalist as soon as he dropped out of that contest. So he can work very well with Johnson. There are members of the cabinet who've got greater experience of sitting around the table, you know, longer terms in office. But all the indications are that he's someone that the system will work with. You know, his colleagues in Downing Street will be able to work with for some time.
Boris Johnson is one of the world leaders that got the most bounce in the polls when this crisis started. What is it going to do to the psyche of the general population? They must be worried.
Oh, no doubt at all about that. I think politics will change in Britain as a result. The dynamic of the political debates, we've got to remember there's a brand new leader of the opposition, Sir Keir Starmer, who's just been elected as leader of Labour. He's still really putting together his front bench team. But he's already signalled that he'll support the government in a number of non-partisan areas, but he'll be critical when he sees problems with government policy. I don't expect we'll see a lot of that in the next few days. I think everyone will be watching Johnson very carefully. And all of the wishes that are coming from political leaders from all sides of politics in Britain are universally wishing him well and hoping that he can get back into office very quickly. But we're witnessing very, very unusual times in terms of politics and how governments respond to this extraordinary threat that we all face. And to have the Prime Minister laid low and somebody who is, as you say, very popular, just won a commanding election victory a matter of months ago, will certainly be very concerning for Britain, and everyone will be wanting to see Johnson recover as quickly as possible.
Is it really something that is going to really make people realise how serious this coronavirus is?
Yes, I've no doubt about that. Britain is seeing deaths at 500-600 people a day, and they're pretty grim headlines. And I think everybody is aware how dangerous the virus is, and any complacency is probably long gone. But seeing a very public figure, we've seen Prince Charles self-isolate after a positive test, but seeing the Prime Minister not just have a positive test, but succumb to the illness in the way that he has and require intensive care will really force to people, I think. Everybody is at risk from this virus, and the importance of social isolation and hand washing and all of the protocols that governments are encouraging.
Emeritus Professor of Politics, Clement McIntyre, speaking with me there. I'm Roderick Chambers, and you're listening to The Wire around Australia on the Community Radio Network.